Hello and welcome to Living Downstream. I'm Julie Lowe, the Environmental and Education Outreach Leader through United Communities AmeriCorps and one of the hosts of Living Downstream. Today, our topic is the dogs used in conservation work. And I'm delighted to be speaking with Laura Holder of the organization Conservation Dogs. Welcome, Laura. Can you tell us more about yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Julie. I am very excited to be here. I am the co-founder, executive director, and also a canine keeper with Conservation Dogs Collective. I'm located out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I've been with the org since our inception back in 2017. So this year we're celebrating our 7th
Seventh
anniversary.
year. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Tell me, what did you do before this and how did you come to create this organization?
Yeah, so before my time as a person working alongside dogs, I actually graduated college with an industrial design degree. I spent 15 years in corporate America doing point of purchase design and showroom design and like that
Right.
life. So I'm a
Right.
creative by DNA and by my upbringing, and I got a dog as an adult after I graduated college, and my dog ended up having some behavioral challenges. And I got introduced to the incredible world of canine nose work. So that's a companion animal competition sport. And I saw some
Right.
behavior changes in him for the better. Go figure, allowing a dog to sniff
Right.
made them feel better about themselves. And from there, I ended up teaching nose work classes for several years. And I got a call from the executive director of Mequon Nature Preserve back in 2016. And she had seen a demonstration of a conservation dog at an invasive species conference back then. And she got my name in the local community here, as I'd been around the block for a while then, teaching and so on. And I helped get their program up and running with a dog handler team for their property. And then from there, start Conservation Dogs Collective. And here we are,
Wow, what did she
2024.
come to you for?
So Mequon Nature Preserve has about 450 acres of land outside of Milwaukee, and they wanted to bring an on-staff dog to serve the needs of the property. So with their invasive species in particular, they have a wild parsnip population, which is a nasty invasive plant. The dog was going to be trained, and it was trained, to locate satellite rosettes that would pop up on the property to help control that nasty, nasty, nasty plant. And then also they're reintroducing two species of salamanders to the property. So the blue-spotted salamander and the eastern tiger salamander. So the dog was being trained for dual purpose, to like species we want to know about and want to have here, and then also species that they're trying to control and eradicate.
That's crazy. I know nothing of this plant. I know a lot about salamanders. I'm a herpetologist. But this plant, I would imagine that the plant has a very unique smell that would be easy perhaps to teach a dog.
Yes
Not
and no.
necessarily.
Well,
And I'm thinking
yeah.
that salamanders would not. Do you know what
Correct.
I'm
Yeah, so
saying?
absolutely know what you're saying. So that's one thing I love about this work. I get to learn all about different species, but then also how
Right.
the dogs interpret those species through their sense of smell. The salamanders and many other reptiles and herps, they have a pretty low odor profile.
Right.
Dogs can definitely be trained to find them, but by design, they're not out there trying to be, found by nature.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's a different level of training for the dogs to really be exposed to those lower odor profiles. The plants obviously are growing above ground,
Right.
and they do throw off a decent amount of odor. But what's really interesting about plants is that if you want a dog to find a plant during a particular life cycle or growth phase, you need to train the dog specifically on that part of, the growth cycle. So with the wild parsnips, we're training them to find just the little rosettes that are, a couple inches high. Once they got to the point where they were going to, shoot out their flower head, the
Right.
dogs actually stopped indicating at that point in training, because the odor profile, like we thought the dogs were broken at first, we're like, oh my God, they
Oh.
stopped indicating, but it's clearly a chemical composition of that odor changed significantly when it was putting all of its energy, to shoot up the flower head. So.
Oh, cool. That is so fascinating because it makes sense when I think about it. Like normally I wouldn't think that flowers or plants in general would change their scent, but it makes a lot of sense. Because there's a point where they want to grow and there's a point where they want to attract pollinators. And we all know they have different ways to attract pollinators, scent and and visual cues, bright colors and whatnot. So that makes a lot of sense if I had stopped to think about it. Wow.
Isn't
And then
that
I'm
cool?
also thinking, as far as salamanders, very often they're found in water or in mud. And so, of course, you'd wonder if a dog's tracking capabilities would be thrown off by mud, but especially by water. Did you find anything there?
Yeah,
Like,
it depends really.
okay.
So we were focused on finding the salamanders when they were hopefully out of the water, which
Okay.
obviously means more mud and other types of vegetation. And part of that is like the ability for the dog to get into the water.
Great.
We're going into ephemeral ponds, and like we didn't want to necessarily disrupt that component of the landscape, right? So keeping the dogs out of the water. But yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of like physical layers, right? Visual
Right.
layers of where salamanders hide and hunker down. So like not just in mud, but they're in mud, and then there's logs, leaf litter, and all that stuff. So
Yeah.
teaching the dogs that like this particular species is going to be buried most
Yeah.
often than not. Yeah. So more difficult for training because like we're trying to set that up, and we can make man-made training environments like that, but it's not necessarily the exact representation that they're going to experience in the wild. So,
Right.
yeah, really challenging.
I'm also thinking for the plants again, the dog might be able to see it, not just smell it, but be able to see it. Are these dogs sight hounds? Or I'm sure they're sniff hounds, but can they sight as well? Do they ever rely on that, or is it all the nose?
So, most of the dogs we have used and I've worked with historically are not relying on their sense of eyesight.
Okay.
They certainly are not turning that off when they're
Great.
working, right? But they are heavily dependent on their sense of smell. There's actually some really cool work by a colleague and casual friend of mine overseas who has a sight hound that she's experimenting with sound and visual detection work with her
Okay.
dog. And like, I mean, sight hounds are fabulous. I actually work with them quite often in my canine nose work career, and it's just really interesting to think about how they might override their sense of smell sometimes or use it in tandem, right, with their sense of eyesight. But
Great.
historically with the dogs I've worked myself and others in conservation, we're not using reliance on eyesight for most of the species. Again,
Okay,
like
you're
if we're
right.
doing a live animal where their silhouette might be more influential, why wouldn't a dog also be using that? Do you know what I
Right,
mean?
right. Well, now I've never worked with hunting dogs, for instance, but I know they point, right? They point at a bird. They stand there and they indicate where a bird is. Is this what the dog does when they find, let's say, when he finds a plant, and does he destroy it, or does he just point or sit at it, or what happens?
Yeah, those are great questions. So our organization definitely relies on what we call a passive indication from our dogs.
Okay.
And that might look like to us, the dog might freeze, like they're standing over the plant. So they might
Yeah.
just be freezing and staring at it. They might stand, look at the plant, and then look back at their human, like, yo, what's
Okay.
the parsnip that I've been trained to find? They do not interact with the target
Okay.
beyond potentially just like a very gentle nose boop. So sometimes when they're just getting really into detailing, finding exactly where that little rosette might be or the teeny tiny mud snail, they might need to get pretty close. So inadvertently, they might be booping it with, their nose a little bit. So they're not digging it up with their paws. They're not eating the target. They're not otherwise being destructive. So
Okay.
it's a very gentle approach, and that's really important for our organization. Like we're not there to destroy wildlife. We're trying to
Right.
leave no trace behind, right? And especially when we come into targets where it's a live animal or a live insect, and we don't want to put undue stress on that individual. So it's, the dog's obviously getting close might be stressful in and of itself, but we are like, okay, we're reading the dog's behavior. We can sometimes call them away when we know, like, you're about to get into a bumblebee nest. Come on back
Right.
over here to let those bumblebees rest,
Right.
and be as peaceful as they can be. So, yeah.
Okay. I'm still back to the salamanders now. I'm going from plants to salamanders because I am a herpetologist and I do go out in the field and I do roll logs a lot, which is good and bad. I mean, we do that to find the animals so that we can record their presence and perhaps, reserve special property for them because of their presence. But I also know it's very disruptive when I roll a log. And I'm careful to put it back and whatnot. So, your dog, when it finds a salamander, Do you then follow through and roll the log, or do you take his word for it that this is an area where he indicated several salamanders and that's good enough for me to know? Or do you then, or the person, have to put eyes on the salamander to verify
Yeah,
and
so
then
usually,
perhaps disrupt his habitat?
right. So we try from our, we call them our finder keeper team. So our dog handler teams try to be as hands off as possible. We're there to be the experts with watching our dog, interpreting their changes of behavior that are indicative of finding the salamander or other species. So, I mean, there's definitely the other set of data that does get collected a lot of times by our partners. So they might then go in and roll the log over, or in like the case of a bumblebee nest, a lot of times they're underground. So that person might sit there and, just kind of gently prod the ground and listen for bumblebee activity or wait for some visual confirmation of bumblebees coming in and out. But I trust my dog. A lot of people that do this work professionally from the dog handler keeper side of things, like we know our dog so well, we see these changes of behavior that we're pretty confident that, if they're exhibiting this set of behavioral observations that we've trained them for, basically, that we can give them their reward and then hopefully allow others to come in and do any additional investigation that they might need. Yeah.
Oh, how cool. Well, tell me about the process. How are the dogs trained to detect these species? Can you walk us through the training process?
Yeah, absolutely. So the process is somewhat simple, and we've all been subject to this in some capacity because we're all learners too. Us humans, we're learners. But for odor detection training, first we need the sample material. So that can be one of the most challenging parts of our work is just getting, not in the case of invasive species a lot of times, but when it's coming to endangered or cryptic species. So we get that material, whatever it is. And we do an initial phase of building odor relevancy to the dog. So this is classical conditioning 101. A lot of times we'll take the material. Let's just pick a salamander. We'll put a salamander in a protected enclosure that has ventilation, and then we will allow the dog to sniff and then immediately follow up with a lot of times food. So you can get a lot of quick repetitions in with food versus toy play at this phase of training. So you're just teaching like the A equals B, right? Like Pavlovian response. So from that point forward, we then start to do some baby steps of integrating the hunt into the game. So we'll start to hide the salamander in a very easy to find location. It might even be in visual sight to begin with, and then progressively make it more and more challenging. And the goal of getting towards whatever those natural in situ areas are that the species is found. And then, not always, but ideally, we go from doing those kind of fabricated setups to finding a known wild population of where that target is found. So this could be in the case of a salamander of home residents, like, oh my gosh, I was out, doing some investigating or hiking around on my property and I saw a blue spotted salamander, just kind of like hanging out on a log. So they'll contact us or we'll contact them and figure out like getting out to the property to run the dogs on a known location. Obviously the salamander can hide from the time the person calls us to the time we actually get there. So that's a bad example, but let's say bumblebee nest is a really great example. So like bumblebee colonies are establishing, early, late spring. So someone might see that nest activity happening, bumblebees are going in and out of a hole and we'll come out to that site, within a week or so to do some live training. And we go from there to field work deployment. So field work deployment will range, or vary greatly, depending on the species we're working on. So yeah, it's a pretty basic like training process, right? Like the biggest challenge really is like that presentation of preparing the dog and the human for field deployment. Like, what type of terrain are you going to have to work through? What type of weather conditions are you going to have to work through? How long are you going to be expected to be doing surveys? What other hazards might you need to be aware of when you're doing surveys? And then also, just like the canine conditioning aspect to it, the outside of field work season, the dogs are constantly, they're not like 50 hours a week or anything, but they're undergoing weekly training just to keep their bodies and brains ready for field work as well.
All right, one more salamander question because this is my interest
Sure.
area. Are salamanders, and I should know this now, I'm embarrassed, Are they that distinct in smell, each of the species? Like, I know very well what a eastern is and a blue spotted, and they're both mole salamanders, I believe. Are they that distinct enough, or was that dog tracking for either an or both of those, and that was fine?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I'd have to ask the dog.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, partially because that program, we only had access to those two species of
Okay.
salamanders for training. So I don't know. I just don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Like if they are that distinctive, like can the dog discriminate between species of salamanders? Like I don't know. All I know is like
Yeah.
dogs have an amazing ability to finely tune their noses, and most of the research on their odor detection thresholds and just ability to, parts per trillion of
Right.
detections, like in the
Right.
medical field. So medical detection dogs have a lot of research papers out there on some of their performance. And then also some of the bomb and drug detection dogs too. The world of conservation detection is still so new that like the amount of research and, people just able to study and publish research findings on it is still very new, and it's
Right.
growing each year. But yeah, we get these questions all the time.
Right,
I love
right.
it. Yeah.
So you keep mentioning this team of dog and trainer. Are these unique teams? Like you have a dog, can you put him, I'm assuming not, but can you put him with anybody, or that is a team from the beginning to the end? Those two are bonded
Yeah. So
and they do a specific job.
Our organization and many others in this field do have dedicated finder keeper teams. So while my two finders, Ernie and Betty White, could certainly go work like for you, they'd be like, hey, if Julie knows our search queue and she wants to come party with
Okay.
us, like they
Yeah.
could totally do it. There is something very special about the ability for the human to work alongside that same dog
Right.
all the time. And there is some research that's coming out about this too. The performance of a dog handler team is actually higher when that dog stays with the same human. So again, certainly dogs can bop around a lot of times, but not every dog will. That's another thing too. Like a lot of it comes down to personality, their temperament, the dog's reinforcement history, and so on.
So how do you get your dogs then? Do you have the dog first, or do you have the trainer first? Or do they come to you as a team sometimes?
Yes, all of the above. A lot of times for our organization, we're going to have the team coming into our organization together. What might happen at that point is the team's in the org and then they bring in a new dog, so they might acquire a puppy from a breeder, or they might get a dog from a rescue or a career change situation. But we do not, like Conservation Dogs Collective does not have dogs, and then we're like, hey, we have this
Right.
dog, we need a person to go with this
Right.
dog. I prefer a team coming in together. And then, just naturally, as we all get older, our
Yeah.
dogs do, get to an age where they get to retire.
Right.
And, we kind of treat each team individually when it comes to that
Okay.
point. Yeah.
Do dogs learn from each other? Can your Betty White, is that one or two dogs?
Betty White is one dog
One dog. Does
who
Betty
acts
White
like
can
10 dogs.
What kind of dog is Betty White, first of all?
She's a black lab.
Black lab. Okay. Can Betty White teach someone else to dance? Can she teach someone
Yes.
else another dog?
Yes. So I've lived with multiple dogs for several years now, almost 10 years, and I've had different sets of pairs of dogs in that time. And I have absolutely seen where dogs can learn from watching another dog.
Okay.
Absolutely. Mirror neurons. I mean, that's the scientific term for that. Like
Oh.
the ability for dogs and us too, like humans can learn from watching each other. Primates can learn from watching each other. Yeah. I mean, sometimes they learn things we don't want them to learn.
Right,
Right.
right, right, right.
But I have definitely seen, especially from Betty, because partially I think I know more now than I did, 20
Yeah.
years ago when I was first getting started in the world of dogs. But I've seen evidence of her watching Ernie do a task and then coming out and being like, oh, I got it. Like, I don't even cue her sometimes. She's like, oh, you were doing
Oh.
a spin around a platform. I know how to do that. I'm like, what?
Oh, so she's literally copying someone who saw she
Yeah.
saw got a good reaction for her.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
Oh, Nate. And I
Yeah.
assume the dog can train a hu another human. Like if you
Oh
bring
my
in
gosh.
another person of you in, can Betty go say, let me show you how this is done?
Yeah. And I'm giggling because, I mean, The dogs are training us too, like
Right.
even me, right? So technically I'm the teacher and they're the learner in a lot of our interactions. However, like what I have set out for this is what you're going to learn today.
Yeah.
I'm always open to the two-way conversation of like the learner is telling me like how they're actually interpreting that, right? And like what they're actually learning. So in that regards, yes, the dogs are teaching us all the time. And when we have newer folks coming into the org, or if I'm doing like a presentation with a demonstration with a dog in tow, I can bring out one of, either Ernie or Betty White and be like, just, wait for her to offer you something. You know what I mean? Like she'll
Right.
teach you all sorts of things. He'll teach you all sorts of things. Like everybody might cue a sit differently. And, my cue for a sit for my dogs is very specific, but someone else might use a different hand cue. And then my dogs might do something completely different. So like that dog is teacher is very, it's very humbling, but also like, I think it's really amazing to be part of that
Yeah.
two-way conversation.
Okay. So now Betty White's a black lab. Is that the perfect dog for this job? Or is any dog capable? And I wouldn't think so because I think, dogs do have their different strengths and they were bred to have those. But so clearly black labs are good at this. Who else is good at this that you've seen?
I love that you appreciate that every dog has their skill set, because that
Yeah.
is, it's true. There are a lot of different breeds of dogs that are doing conservation detection work throughout the world. Our org is heavily skewed towards the Labrador Retrievers,
Okay.
partially be it's a handler preference for some of us. They're also really versatile dogs, so they can, happily work on turtles one day and then bumblebee nests the next day, and like
Okay.
hang out with my nephews and nieces when they come over on the weekend.
Right.
They're bred for hunting tasks as well, so we're just going with a little bit of genetics and then human
Right.
playing in that breed selection as well. There's lots of different herding breeds out there too. There's cattle dogs, there's German Shepherds, there's Malinois, there's breed mixes in there. We also have a pit bull on our team. We have a
Okay.
lab Rottweiler mix. What we really look for our current work in our org is a dog that's going to be able to kind of check a couple boxes off for our different project needs, because we don't need a dog that's a specialist to only
Right.
find. Like we just, with the work demand and our reach right now, we need a team that's able to do several different species work at this point. Like different types of orgs, like down in New Zealand, they skew more towards smaller dogs because they're doing a lot of port of entry. They have like rougher terrain, so those smaller dogs that are like in the 20-pound range sometimes, and a lot of times terriers, they're getting into
Sure.
these smaller spaces a lot more easily than a Great Pyrenees would, or
Right.
even a Labrador. So it's like breed selection with a mind towards like what is the best fit for that environment. And then also like they call it biddability a lot of times, so the dog's ability to work alongside a human
Okay,
for a
right.
particular task, right? And then you also need a dog that does
Yeah.
care about the human, because we're delivering the reward for them. We're
Right.
transporting them to their job and back home and caring for them too.
Okay, well, I have four dogs and I'm not going to start my, well, my dog is, but I have four Australian Shepherds and, a beautiful animal, but they don't herd salamanders real well. But wouldn't that be lovely if they did? But also, they're very different. One is motivated by food and one is absolutely couldn't care less. And I have one female who just wants to please. Like they want to do what they think you want them to do. And so I imagine you can't just say, well, this is a black lab, so it's going to be good at this.
Absolutely. That is
Like you're
100%
saying.
true. Yeah. It
Yeah.
comes down to the individual. I mean, I have two labs and like they're so different. But they're both motivated to want to work for something, right?
Right.
Labs in general, like there's such a variety in labs, just like there is with Australian Shepherds from what
Right.
I've seen too. It's like they have your confirmation line dogs that are a
Right, right,
little
right.
bit more, they're not couch potatoes, but they're bred for different things. And then you have your working line versions of all of those breeds too. But even there within, you could have a fantastic confirmation dog that also could be a detection dog. And then you have a field
Right.
dog who might not give a hoot and a holler about
Right.
going out and working with the
Right.
human, right?
Yeah, our male doesn't care what you want. That's fine. He won't hurt anything, but he just doesn't care what you want. And so he's not a good candidate. How would I look at my other three and say, you're a great candidate because of this? If someone has a dog at home, how would they look at their dog and evaluate and say, this might be an option?
Yeah, so that's a loaded question,
I
like you
know.
want to say. Like, but in general, what I would say is if you have a dog that will one care about you but also be independent enough to go out away from you and want to like seek out a toy that you've hidden or a piece of food that you've hidden, or even a person, right? Like search and rescue work, like a hidden person,
You're right.
and display that motivation in an incremental way, in a progressive way, in more and more challenging scenarios. So as an example of that, like let's say you hide a piece of food behind your couch or something, and then you release your dog from the kitchen and they go find it and do like, yay, I found it in 10 seconds. What happens if you put an X pen or like a gate in the way, but they still have an access somehow to go around, underneath, over the top, or some through, I don't know. Showing this kind of I'll say tenacity, but not like in an aggressive way. They're just like, I know I can figure this out. I can do this by myself, with us staying out of the dog's way and without us helping the dog too much. So part of that is like, one, is your dog a problem solver? Some dogs are, but they're like, oh, it's really hard and I'd rather not. So you know what I mean? Or like, I'd rather go over here and do this. Which some of that you can absolutely train the enthusiasm into like, let's try a little harder, right? But some dogs truly are just like, no, thank you. So that's one checkpoint that I would do. Like, is your dog able to figure out some problems, in a familiar environment? Okay, now great. Will they do this outside? Okay, now great. Will they do this outside with some other competing environmental stimulation going on,
And
right? Like,
distractions, right?
birds flying overhead, or like we've had during field work, like people ride by on horses, in the middle of a bumblebee search. And I was like, well, I didn't tr like train that in a training setup, but my dogs were so fluent with like, oh, just like weird stuff happens a lot during training. They took a moment to look at the horse and then they look back at me. I'm like, yeah, I know, weird, right? Cool. Let's keep searching. So, I mean, a lot of conservation detection tasks happen outdoors, but not all of them do. But, if there's a goal in a person's head of like, I'd love to do this work, that's something to consider. I've heard 1,000 times a day, like my dog's really good at smelling, they could really find that hot dog outside. But then, it's not just about being able to find a hot dog outside. It's so much more than that. Staying focused on task. And then there's our side of the thing. Like, do we really want to be out? You know this really well. Like, do you really want to be outside amongst, like over here we've got ticks galore, tick season is upon us. So like, do you want to be picking ticks off yourself and your dog? Do you want to be like having to bushwhack your way through prickly ash and buckthorn, and like also watching for your dog's change of behavior when they're potentially smelling a turtle or a salamander, or what happens when your dog gets attacked by wasps? Like, what are you gonna do? So there's all those other factors too. But I encourage every dog to be a nosy dog. So even if it means hiding treats or teaching your dog an essential oil, it's a fabulous outlet for your dog and a great way to build your relationship together.
Well, I'm just thinking finding your wallet in the house every day.
Finding your wallet. I taught my dog to find my keys. My very first dog I ever had out of college. I was like, I don't. She was really brilliant, and I did again, like first dog owner.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm bored. I'm going to teach my dog how to find my keys in the house,
Yeah.
right? Yeah, and that dog was so happy. Her name was Fanny. She was so happy doing that.
Oh, I'm going to go do that today.
Yeah,
All
find
right.
money.
Exactly. What about the dog that you've taught to find the salamander? How easy is it to turn it over to, like, we're not looking for salamanders today. Today we're going to look for, a box turtle. How do you, is, first of all, can they switch? And then how did you tell them what we're doing today?
Yeah, so it's an excellent question as well. I love it. We actually don't tell our dogs what to find today. I know. So part of that is we want to, as the humans, we want to keep our dogs as motivated as possible when they're out doing surveys. A lot of times there won't be species overlap in some of our environments, where like if we have a dog that's trained on turtles and bumblebees, we might not be surveying in an area where both of those would overlap, right? But we could. So I would rather keep my dogs motivated to tell me everything that they've been trained to find, because that actually will increase their performance over the course of the survey day. So if let's say we're out to specifically find turtles today, but along the way my dog veers off, finds a bumblebee nest.
Uh-huh.
I go over, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's a bumblebee nest. If I say like, not today, what do you think the dog interprets that
Oh.
as, right? It's
Yeah.
like a big, most of the dogs, right? Like 95% of the dogs in the planet Earth would probably be like, well, that was crappy. That was a punisher. I thought you want me to tell you about that stuff,
Yeah,
right?
when your kid brings you a picture he drew and you're like, oh, that's nice, honey.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
So you're much better off just being like, oh my gosh, it's a bumblebee nest. Great. Here's a little piece of a, kibble or a dry biscuit. We're gonna keep
Okay.
finding more stuff. Let's go find
Let's
some turtles,
do more.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the benefit of that too is like, this has actually happened to me when Ernie and I did wood turtle surveys back, this was like 5 years ago. We're out trying to find wood turtles, and like the reinforcement strain was huge. So like, we had not found a turtle yet. We'd been searching for an hour and a half to 2 hours. We came around the bend of a river, and this it was like, oh, this beautiful patch of horrible wild parsnip rosettes presented itself. And I'm not making this up, I swear. Like, Ernie just took a right hand turn. He's like, oh my gosh, there's the odor I've been wanting all day today. And he just went right over there, and he's like, oh my gosh, look what I found. I'm like, oh my gosh, look what you found. And like, I paid him, and we had a little
Okay.
party, took a little water break, and then we continued on for turtle surveys, and he ended up finding a turtle, within like a half hour after that. But like, just seeing, because like, he was trekking along, like, yeah, I'm looking for turtles, looking for turtles. But then when he was like, I know that smell, and like, he just took off, and I'm like, okay, go for it, dude. That really like motivated him to continue searching more after he found the wild parsnip.
That makes sense because if you're looking for more than one object, your chances of coming upon it are greater, clearly, having some
Exactly.
success.
Exactly. Yeah. And some other folks will do what's called a match to sample. So they might present to the dog at the start of a search, like, here's a cotton swab that's rubbed with turtle smell. Like,
Yeah.
sniff that, go find that. But like, the performance aspect of it, like, if again, you're talking about hours sometimes of surveying,
Yeah.
and for your dog to one even recall over the course of that time, like, what is that smell that I smelled 2 hours ago at the
Right.
start line? You know what I mean?
Right.
I think it's a much more learner-centric way to teach if you have multiple
Yeah.
targets and just let your dog tell you about all of them.
So you just mentioned that scent he got at the beginning. Does the dog remember that? Like, let's say you left at 9 this morning and he got the scent at the whatever, at your starting spot. Is he reintroduced that scent during the day or he has to remember?
So we don't do that. So we don't say like,
Okay.
when we go for
Oh,
bumblebee
okay.
surveys, like, I don't say like, smell the bumblebee's nest. Okay, let's go find
Yeah.
it, because we don't know. I mean, we don't know the working memory of
Okay.
a dog. Like, there's some research out there for human learner tasks of like, I'm going to show you. Remember, like, the memory, was it called memory? I'm trying to think, the board game thing with all the heads, like different person's faces on the thing, and you're
Yeah.
playing against your partner. Yeah. So like, it's like, oh my gosh, I don't remember if that person was wearing glasses. Did they have
Right.
blonde
Yeah.
hair? Oh
Yeah.
my gosh, I don't remember. So like, we know what that feels like. And then when we ask that of another species that we're working alongside with, I don't
Sure.
necessarily think it's like the best approach. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying, I don't know if that's like the best ask to ask a dog, right? To like, remember that smell from 3 hours ago that I gave you coming out of the car. That's what I want you to find and
So you
continue to
don't,
find.
so you're saying that even at the beginning, you don't tell them what they're continuing to, like this dog
Correct.
knows before you went out that day, this dog knows what he's going to go find. You don't
Yes.
just like say today it's a salamander and tomorrow it's a bumblebee and next
No.
Wednesday it's a some kind of fern.
Correct. That is correct. So they have, the dog has one search cue. So a verbal word that is said to them. So for Ernie, it's Google. For Betty, it's go search. When they hear those words, they know, I'm going out to pursue any odor that I am trained on to date, right? So turtles, bumblebees, whatever else they might be
Right.
trained on.
Okay. Have you ever trained a dog where he looks like a really great prospect and you get out there and you and he's doing well and well and but in the end it didn't click and why? What made it, I don't want to call him fail because he didn't fail, but
Right.
what made you rethink that maybe this is it's not going to work out? when it
I
looked like
have,
a good prospect.
yeah. Fortunately, I have not experienced that with my own dogs, and the
Yeah.
dogs in the Oregon part of that is like the some of it is like the recruitment process of bringing teams in. It's like we've seen these dogs have promise already in these hunt tasks, right?
Okay.
But it's a reality that's out there, right? And the way that I would be approaching that, and I'm doing it all the time when I'm with my dogs too. I'm monitoring their performance and I'm going, ooh, you know, like maybe Ernie's not the best for this huge alfalfa field that's 5 acres big and we only have an
Yeah.
hour or 2 hours to be here. I'll be like, Betty White's going out because she's gonna move three times as fast as him and
Yeah.
can cover that ground, right? But a true, sometimes the terms like washout, right? Like a washout dog or whatever, which I hate because they're not doing anything wrong, like you
Right.
said. Hopefully you're seeing in the training process some of the tendencies that the dog is going to skew towards before you actually get out into the field. So it could
Okay.
be when you're setting up those barrier challenges or you're going out in the wilderness, right? And you're like doing some training. You're like, oh, my dog's really interested in birds. And we're going to have to encounter birds all the time, right? I might be like, this dog is not appropriate for a task where we're going to
Okay.
be in scenarios where there's going to be a bunch of birds, you know, ground bird, ground nesting birds or birds that are, you know, flying overhead. Betty has a little bit more interest in wildlife than Ernie
Okay.
does. Like Ernie would go shake hands with a squirrel kind of dog. You know, like he's a
You're right.
fabulous working dog to be outside. Betty, rabbits are something she's very interested in. So like there was a point in her younger career where I was like, oh, I don't know if she's gonna be a good candidate for field work out in many of the areas we're gonna be. But what I actually came to realize is like in the city here where we live, like there's rabbits everywhere.
Right.
So I can keep her on leash and really work on checking in with me when she sees rabbits versus like just caring about the
Right.
rabbits. So that's a constant reinforcement reminder for her in the city. And a lot of times out in the wilderness, we're not even encountering rabbits because they're prey animals that are picked off by predators. So like it
Yeah.
actually turned into nothing we needed to really be overly concerned about.
Okay.
So, but it depends, right? It's always the answer, like it
It
depends a little
depends. It
bit.
depends. That's
It
awesome.
depends. Yeah, and this is where too, like with, because we were talking about sight hounds earlier, like I would be very mindful of breed tendencies, right? Like just breed tendencies, not that it's a all or nothing, but if I'm going to be doing a live prey animal type of project, I'm probably not going to pick a sight hound for my dog
Right.
out of the
Right.
gate,
Right.
right? So I'm doing some alignment of breed tendencies with, you know, projected target odors that we're
Right.
going to be working on.
Well, let me remind our guests just tuning in. This is Living Downstream on 99.7 KQUA. I'm your host, Julie Lowe, and we're speaking with Laura Holder of the organization Conservation Dogs. All right, we've talked salamanders and the turtles and a couple plants. What else? And the bumblebees. What else have you seen dogs trained to go look for?
Oh man, they have been trained to find. So one of the biggest things that I wish we could work on, scat, right? So mammal
Oh,
scat, yeah. So wolf scat, grizzly scat, cheetah scat, all sorts of different types of mammal scat. They have also been trained to find, like over in Hawaii, there are nesting birds. So I don't know the species off the top of my head, but birds that are
Right.
nesting on the rocky kind of shoreline areas. Dogs have been used to find the nests to help with, you know, preservation of the eggs so they don't get
Right.
predated on. Aquatic invasive species. So we've got quagga mussels, zebra mussels, the New Zealand mud snail. We got, let's see, our friends. There's actually a lot of salamander work going on over in the UK, but they're also doing hedgehog detection, which I think is amazing.
Hedgehog,
So that's a,
love it.
yes, super exciting. And let's see. What else? I'm sure I'm missing like obvious. Oh, whale poop scat. Okay, so this was
Whale
one.
poop.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So whale poop out on like your part of the country, the
Right.
University of Washington did a whale scat project. It might still be going on, but they literally take a dog out on the front of a boat on the Pacific Ocean, and the dog is like orientating its head. The handler is right behind, so the handler can communicate with the captain
Right.
and be like, oh, go to the left. Okay. And then here's the, you know, pile of greasy whale poo that the dog detected from a boat on the ocean. I would probably poop.
Wow.
I know, like incredible, right? That was one of the very first applications of conservation dogs that I heard about like 8 to 9 years ago. And I was like, I what? You know, I was like, is this like an April Fool's joke? Like,
That's amazing.
Yeah, really incredible. And then also, there's dogs that are being trained for contaminants, so oil spills, other types of pollutants that are, from runoff or broken pipes or whatever the case might be. So that falls under conservation detection as well. Yeah.
Wow. Tell me one of your good stories. You told me the one about the dog who was looking for the wood turtle and couldn't find anything and was so relieved to finally find something. Tell me a neat another story or an ex field
Sure. So,
example.
yeah, so that was a story about Ernie. So I'll tell you a story about Betty White.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Betty.
A lot of people like Betty. She's pretty special. So we were doing bumblebee work in 2022, and we had for this particular survey, it was a 55 by 55 meter plot. So, like, on the surface, a really boring, like, it's a
Right.
pretty small space for a dog to work, easily do that in like 5 to 10 minutes. But what was special about this particular partner that we were working with, we came back to this plot 3 times throughout the summer by design. Like, it was for part of a larger study. So we had, this was on our third visit with Betty, and we found 5 bumblebee nests in a 20 meter radius. And this was really like
Wow.
her first full year of like being a
Yeah.
mature-ish dog. And I was just absolutely blown away. One, that like she found 5 nests, period, in a
Right.
day, because that's not common. And then she found 5 nests in such a small radius of space, all things considered. And then what was the icing on the cake too, which Betty didn't know about and I didn't know about, but our research partner told us about, there were 5 different species of bumblebees that were found, which is just really cool. Just,
Neat.
yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a very good day. We got ice cream on the way home.
Puppuccino.
Yes, yeah.
So when
Very
you and
well
Betty,
deserved.
absolutely. When you and Betty go out with someone, it's not just you two necessarily, because maybe you yourself don't know about bumblebees or blue spotted salamanders or whatever. So you two go out with a conservationist or a scientist or a person. Is
Yeah.
that true?
Typically, yes. If it's a newer project to us, we absolutely have a conservationist or a wildlife biologist with us to do the hands-on component, like
Right.
species identification, if there's any manipulation that needs to be done or data that needs to be pulled, they're responsible for that. With some of our bumblebee nest work, because this is now the 4th year that I'll be doing field work, sometimes I am going out with just the 2 dogs.
Because you know what you're doing at this
Because
point.
I,
Yeah.
yeah, I know what I'm doing enough. There's
Yeah.
always like, it would be nice to have the researcher, biologist, conservationist along, but a lot of that, like, I can take the data, I can do video, I can do pictures,
You're right.
I can tag, drop a GPS point, whatever I need to do. Obviously, if we encounter any species that's federally endangered or listed, we're immediately calling in the appropriate people that have the
Right.
permits to do that type of work. But yeah, I mean, with the wood turtle work, Ernie and I went out just for a training day with a Wisconsin DNR representative, and that was critical because we didn't think we were going to find anything, but we did. We found a turtle that had never been tagged before, so that
Oh, yeah.
individual then did all of the data collection, took the measurements, the pictures of the turtle, actually did the little notch on the turtle to put it
Yeah.
into the statewide system, took a blood draw, so like I got to watch a turtle having its
Right.
blood taken, and then they put a
Limey. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they put the microchip in the turtle as well.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, how
So,
really cool.
yeah, it's super cool.
So, how do you ensure the safety and the well-being of the dogs when they're out there? Like the bumblebee, I don't know if that would hurt him or not, maybe. But what if it's another, what if it's a rattlesnake or something? Or
Yeah.
a bear or a rabid fox or whatever. How do you
It's
ensure their
prep.
safety when they're working?
Yeah, preparation is key, right? So we always do an evaluation before we go out of what natural predators might we, or hazards for that matter, might we
Yeah.
encounter where we're going to be doing surveys. From there, we always look up at least 2, usually 3 or 4 veterinary clinics that are going to be within a 30
Oh.
to 60 minute drive if possible. Sometimes we're too far out, it's going to be a longer drive, but we locate them, and we also call those clinics to make sure that, especially during COVID, we're like, will you be taking in a new client? And like, this is what we're going to be doing in the
Right.
area. If, we get something happens to the dog and I need to get in, can we do it? So we get all of that pre-deployment work completed.
Oh.
Our keepers are also certified in canine first aid and CPR. So we can do the
Huh.
basic stuff. So if the dogs do get, a hemorrhage on a leg or whatever, we know how to wrap for immediate, relief of that. We always carry a first aid kit on our bodies, more than the dog weighs sometimes. So we've got, and for us too. So we've got our primary first aid kit. We always, always, always tell at least one other staff member where we're going to be at all times, including like if someone has a partner in their life as well. So somebody knows where someone is at all times.
Right.
And then, beyond that, it's like being environmentally aware, which sounds like Captain Obvious, but also
Yeah.
sometimes it gets put to the wayside because you're so into watching your dog. So it's really having that mental stamina and rehearsal of I'm watching my dog in the environment, but I'm also watching the skyline,
Right.
right? Like, is there a storm coming in? Like, I'm being aware of like other noises around me or absence of noises all of a sudden. And really, just being aware, which again sounds ridiculous, but like in the day nowadays, we're so used to like
Oh, yeah.
bombardment of stimuli, like we sometimes forget to turn those natural senses and awareness off. That's most of it. It's hard. Sometimes it's really hard to like keep yourself on your feet while you're watching your dog and the environment around you, but
Yeah.
it's preparation and getting out there. There's also wilderness training courses, that can be taken depending on where we're going to be deployed. We don't have to worry necessarily about like wildfires where we are, but I know a lot of the orgs out west that are doing this
Right.
work, they take wildlife fire wilderness readiness tests and all that stuff. They know how to read smoke coming and where it's coming from and like how quick they need to get out of there.
Yeah.
So I was gonna say the dogs always get a pre and post field work exam, quick exam too. So a hands-on exam, like do I feel any heat here? Is my dog all of a sudden like
Yeah.
recoiling their foot? Looking in the ears, the nose, the mouth, sometimes the butt if we need
Yeah,
to.
yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever had any emergencies or close encounters or scares?
I two two one of them was much more scary than the other. Ernie, when we were doing wood turtle work, he lost his footing along a riverbank.
Oh.
And even though he was on leash, like he like went into the river. So I had the foresight to just drop the leash because I'm like, if I'm not safe, like if I go down with him, who knows what's going to happen, right? So I dropped
Right.
the leash and I was like, I just got myself downstream as fast as I could to get him out. He was fine. Like he kind of came out
Yeah.
like, what was that? That was weird. I'm
Oh,
like,
jeez.
oh my God. But I mean, my heart was like racing, right? Because I'm like, there goes my dog. Like,
Yeah.
so staying calm, right? It's really like in an airplane, the mask on yourself first before you treat others. And then with Betty, the last day of Bumblebee field work in 2023, she was working a field, and all of a sudden I noticed there were yellow jackets starting to come out and around, and I
Ooh.
was like, oh,
Yeah.
shnikes. And she's black, so I could see they started landing on
Yeah.
her head. So I immediately, she was off leash, but she was close enough where I was like, all right, I'm just gonna, I totally cut her off of her search task. I just did a positive interrupt, like, let's get moving. And we just like
Yeah.
booked it towards a different area. And I mean, she had three or four yellow
Yeah.
jackets on her. I had, in the process of trying to
Yep.
get her to safety, they're flying up my, sleeves and all that. But sat there with her for 20 minutes, immediately called the vet that we had on call and just said, this is what happened. I have the Benadryl, I have the injectable Benadryl. What do you want me to do? How long should I observe? Even though I had that all written out, I
Yeah.
went through the process of making sure she was safe, which she was. She took three Benadryl and then went back out for a survey an hour later.
Wow, she didn't fall asleep.
No, I don't.
Wow.
She's something else. But yeah, those two incidents were the worst I've experienced, thankfully. It could be
Okay.
much worse, but part of that is being prepared, knowing ahead of time where we're going to be. And both situations, I had someone else there with me, so which is why I always prefer to go out with a second person too. Doing this alone is doable, but I don't know if that's the smartest choice, right?
Right. And I'm assuming you do. Do you pay attention to your dog? We take ours out a little bit. We have one who I know there's some mountain lions and bears up there. And when that little girl, who's very frightful little dog, doesn't get out of the car, there's something that she knows that the other three are sensitive to or something. Have you ever had that experience where the dog's going, you know what? This is not a good day. This is not, there's something here that I'm not
Something
good with.
funky.
Yeah,
Yeah,
something funky.
not necessarily during field work. I will say I've We have urban coyotes near
Okay,
our,
yeah.
actually in our neighborhood, and I have definitely noticed with the dogs when we go to let them out in the morning. We have a fenced in, a 5-foot fenced in
Yeah.
backyard. So coyotes, knock on wood, haven't gotten into our yard or anything, but I can tell a change in their behavior as soon as they get outside sometimes, where they're like, something's, like something's different this morning, or when we're going out on our leashed walks around the neighborhood area, I'm like, they're acting, they get a little bit more like kind of prickly and frisky and
Yeah.
frontal, with their
Yeah,
body
yeah, yeah,
language. And
yeah.
I'm like, this is not a new dog in the neighborhood. You know what I mean? So then
Yeah.
I'm, oop, got it. Yes. Right. So I'm definitely in tune with some of that
Yeah.
behavior for sure.
Now, you said that your dog, you had it on the leash and you had it on the leash here and the leash there. Are these dogs, I would assume they would be running, not free, but running off leash so they had a better area to, but do you keep your dog on the leash then when you're out there? Usually.
It's a combination of on and off leash work. It just depends on the environment. Sometimes we're working too close to, 55, 65 mile an hour roads that I'm like,
Right.
it's not worth taking any risk, even though my dog historically has never run off, right? I'm not going to
Right.
take the risk at all. Other times we have to work on leash, depending on, we might be on a public land, where the trails are open for people walking through or whatever. So it's a requirement by the project partner or property owner that the dogs stay on leash, but they are trained both on and off leash, so they have that
Right.
flexibility. And don't look at us all of a sudden one day if we take them off leash, like, woohoo, I'm free,
Right,
peace out.
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's another thing too. We talked earlier about things that you can do with your own dog. A lot of some
Right.
dogs primarily live their life on leash. It's like, can they search off leash, right? And vice versa.
Right.
Like, I have some students and people I know that those dogs are like always off leash because of where they live. We're going to work on leash today. And then, the human's like, I don't know how to manage this leash with my hands. And the dog's like, what are you
Right.
doing? You're hitting me in the face with this rope thing. So,
I might think sometimes a dog on leash might rely too much on its human because it's tied to the human for the moment, so might not use its own senses to go explore if it's more focused on what the human is doing. Do you know what I'm saying? It might not
I
have the
do.
independence if it's
Yeah.
tied to the human. It might go, well, okay, I'm doing what you want for the moment.
Yeah, there's definitely some dogs that will default into more of a, like, oh, the human is, drive, I'll say controlling or
Driving, yeah.
driving, right? Or any dogs that may have had an history of corrective style training, when they hit the end of a line, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. And they kind of like go into this,
Right,
like, oh my
right,
gosh, I'm so sorry.
right.
My dogs are like the exact opposite. Like, when they're on a leash, like, they're mostly not pulling me down the street when we're in the neighborhood. But if we're out doing an actual survey and they're on leash, they're game on, sister. You know what I mean? Like, they'll just
Yeah.
plow ahead. But they've been trained for that. I set them up for training experience. Like, when I have this leash on, I still want you to be an independent hunter.
Yeah.
They're not, again, they're not taking me down for real. But they're out there.
Yeah.
They're not afraid of leash pressure on their harness or
Right,
collar,
right. Yeah, so it's a whole different way of training. I was going to say, are these dogs, when they come to you, or when you get a new dog or whatnot, are they basically trained before you start training them with smell? Like, or do they do the good sit, stay, come, all the basics first before you could start training at this, I guess, higher level?
I tend to train simultaneously, not in the same session, not in
Yeah.
the same training session, but as like a puppy, when I get a puppy, I'm like, we're going to be doing these, I'll say, life skills, right? Like,
Right,
these can save
exactly.
your life type of skills. So, coming when called, sitting, all that good stuff. The same week, or even the same day, maybe, as we're doing puppy nose work tasks, and over the course of their working career, they're still getting constant maintenance training for coming when called, or emergency downs, going around
Right.
something, going under something when cued, as well as the scent tasks. I mean, they come out of the womb, knowing how to smell, to
Right,
be
right,
honest. So,
right, right,
like,
right.
a lot of it is, these are the skills I need you to learn to stay safe when we're doing our work, and also just to be a good partner in our work
Yeah,
that we're doing,
yeah.
right? And then obviously the scent stuff, you are teaching them, like, okay, you're going to see this in this scenario, and this scenario, and that scenario.
Yeah.
But they're naturally nosy,
Right. And I have one dog that I had given up on. I'd really given up on him. He was just unreliable and erratic and reactive. And that was when he was young. And now he's over two, maybe three, and he's changed entirely. And now I think maybe I can do something with him. So the fact that this poor guy, who is now my favorite, is now three and has really gone through his life being a problem child and really didn't get much attention because he was annoying and difficult. Now I'm thinking, you are the smartest. Is it too late for me to start with him?
No way, never. It's never too late. It is not. And that story is something that I think is should be talked about more too. Dogs don't mature usually until they're like 3 or 4 years of age,
Right.
like mentally, right? Physically, they're usually at their full adult look, when they're about 1 year or so of age. But like, there is so much they need to learn and have to learn just to be a dog, let alone all
Right.
the situations that they're going to be put in our human world, that I think a lot of time, in detection, working detection tasks, a lot of times dogs are selectively bred for detection work,
Okay.
and they're put in a very regimented training program, where they're getting a lot of training time and interaction on a daily basis throughout the course of a week. And the goal with those dogs is like, they need to be ready by like 10 to 14 months of age for their career, right?
Right.
I'm not saying that that is wrong. That is like definitely a need. Like, I love the dogs that are keeping our world safe. You know what I mean? Like, from
Right.
bombs and, like the
Yeah.
drug detection dogs, port of entry, all that stuff. The companionship dogs that we live in our house with, we have jobs. We have other things going on. You know what I mean? Like, we
Yeah.
don't have the ability to spend 40 hours a week on training our
Yeah.
dogs. And I think that actually provides an opportunity for us to get to know our dogs on a different level, like a different type of level. And I've been there with teenage dogs where you're like, oh my God.
Right,
That was
right.
my first dog that I got into nose work with, Oscar. He was driving, he wasn't really driving me crazy, right? I didn't understand him and I didn't understand
Right.
his needs. And then when he did hit nose work and like 2.5, 3 years of age, I was like, who is this dog? He is so smart,
Well, that
So.
has me really rethinking this dog. I'd almost given up
Yeah.
on him and I was going to rehome him to a someone who is better able to deal with him. And now he's turned around and he's a brilliant dog. And so we'll see if I can. I'm so motivated at this point.
Yeah. Oh, I love that you gave him
Yeah.
time too.
Oh, it was
It's hard
close.
in the moment. I know.
It
I've
was
been
close.
there. I've been
Yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, wow. This is, tell me, who are your partners? How can people find you? Either wildlife biologists who want to work with you all, or how can people find you?
Yeah, so we are on the internet.
Okay.
conservationdogscollective.org is our website, and there is a plethora of resources on our website. If you're interested in assessing a potential project for the use of dogs, we have an online assessment tool that you can use. If you know you want to use a dog and you're ready to talk more details, we have a contact form for project partners that are interested in that. A lot of people also are interested in getting into this work with their own dog, either a
Right,
current dog
right.
or a future dog. We have a project, I actually, well, they won't be able to see it, but I have a project record and guidebook publication that we came out with
Okay.
last year that is like a as close to start to finish resource for thinking about a project as you can get right now. So we're the first org
Okay.
to put something like that out. So it's all, who are your project partners going to be? Do you have the insurance? Okay, target odor
Fantastic.
acquisition, like the
Yeah.
training and the field deployment and then post project analysis. That's all in a nice bound packet for people. And we're also on social media. We tend to share a lot more of, the dog's antics and things like that, but
Yeah.
also our project updates and some of the current research going on. So Conservation Dogs Collective is our social handle on Instagram and Facebook. But I am very proud of our website because it is a lot of good resources that you can kind of, ho-hum through without the
Yeah.
distractions of social media sometimes.
Yeah. It's incredible. I think the whole story is incredible. I want to
Thank
thank you
you.
so much, Laura. This has been fascinating. I can't wait to go try to work with this poor dog whose name is Doobie. He has an unfortunate
Doobie.
Doobie has an unfortunate name. He was raised on a college campus and poor
Oh
guy.
my God. I think it's perfect.
Right. Let me
Oh.
remind our listeners, this has been an episode of Living Downstream, and I'm your host, Julie Lowe. I've been speaking with Laura Holder of Conservation Dogs. If you dropped in late or missed any part of this interview or any other interview in our series, you can find past episodes at umpquawatersheds.org, and thank you for listening.